I would now like to introduce our speaker tonight, John C. from Magalia.
My name is John. I am an alcoholic. There is nothing that thrills me more to stand in front of somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous Bay 1, 2, or 3 and say my name and hear, "Hi, John," and sit, "Get out, you SOB." That's so good. You are a little weak. Oh, I'd like to try it again and get together with this thing so we can all get enthusiastic about recovery. My name is John. I am an alcoholic. Ah, dear, that's good. I have been paid tonight. What a thrill it goes through to know that I can stand before you and be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and have the greatest life a man could ever have. And how in the hell can something like that happen to a man like me beyond my wildest dreams? How can somebody like me, is the question, become somebody like me? It's a little weird, but it works. Now, I've had a lot of help here from a lot of people who love me dearly. and they've been encouraging me to do bad things. I've heard several times that I should give you hell. Now, I gave you hell with a bottle. And it turned out to be a nasty thing, because that's the way I live, with a bottle in my hand. And I'm here to offer peace, some loving, enthusiasm, and sobriety to a God that I don't understand, but know has given me the keys to the kingdom. And I got it here. And I wasn't looking for you when I found you. You were looking for me. And I realize this is going to be a little impudent to some people, but you see, I have been chosen. I know that I've been chosen. I've heard the word, and the word came from Alcoholics Anonymous. In the length of time that I drank, which was 30 years, I not once was I ever told to my, that I heard, that I should stop drinking. I was an alcoholic, but I drank too much. So I'm sitting in a saloon not too far away from here. Actually, a saloon. I dressed that up. Actually, it was a Cambrian bowl. God, I never wanted to say that publicly. You know, a badass like me should really drink in some dark, dirty hole. But I'm sipping little drinks in the lounge at the Cambrian bowl. And some young man came in and sat down beside me and ordered a Coke. Now, he and I had his last drunk together, and I had to get it wakened up at some 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning to go bail him out, and my lament was the same one I had many times. That's why I didn't drink with anybody. God, if he only handled his drinking, he would not be in this sort of trouble. And what happened to him is he found a place, and he came to tell me about it. This kid had 5 days of sobriety. 5 days. Thank God he didn't know the rules of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank God. He got so excited and so enthused that evening that he came and he sat down beside me and he said, "John," he said these words, "I have found a place and you will like the people." Oh, get serious. Any place that had people in it was not where I wanted to be, and I did not like the people. Because I was born into a world that I didn't fit into with people in it, and that was the first problem. And one of the biggest problems was one of the people was me. I didn't like this sort of thing. But he said, "I found a place, and you will like the people." And then he said, "Will you go to a meeting with me?" Now, I'm on my 4th drink of bourbon whiskey. Now, if you know anything about drinking, you know that nothing is more useless than one drink, unless it's 2. Now, if 3, it starts to wet your tongue a little bit, and by 4, you're ready to sail. You could say the allergy in my body was so strong it was lit. And he said, "Will you go to a meeting with me?" And I'll be damned if I didn't say yes. I had no clue what you people did. Notice I'm trying to watch my language, you know that. Okay. I said yes. And from that moment to this, I have had not any mind-altering drug or chemical in my system. That was the 11th of March, 1976. So I've got 27 plus years. By God's grace, the God I didn't know, didn't want to know, His love was so strong it reached out to me when I could not find you. See, 9 years before I got here, I bottomed up. Bottomed out so bad in the town of, the town Fresno. Oh, God, they stole all my money. They stole again. Yeah. I like to tell you, Fresno, this is my favorite story. I didn't know this story until I was 8 years sober. More is being revealed to me, you know. I'm waiting for 30 to see what the hell is now going to be divulged. But I'm sitting there and I'm talking. As a matter of fact, the daughter sitting at the table, I think she was sitting there, was at the same meeting when I said it, and they both, or at least my wife, came up to me and said, I didn't hear that before. And I said, neither did I. Fresno is so bad that I took a drink in Fresno and came to in Chico. Now, if you've ever been to Chico, it sure tells you how bad Fresno is. Now, I came to in a little tiny motel room. It cost, I think, $5 a night. It was a first-class job. But I didn't have any clothes on. Now, don't you know, I sleep with my jammies on. And I don't sleep without clothes on very well. But I didn't have any on. And I looked around and I was alone. That's a good thing when you're married. Wasn't too sure where I was. And that's common if you're drunk. And then I looked at me. And all over my body, I had little purple stripes. An inch and a half approx by a quarter inch. They were all over my body. They were in places I can't reach. They were in places other people shouldn't reach. Now this is serious. You're laughing at it, but this is serious for God's sake. You wake up in a strange place, in a strange bed. You got purple stripes on. You haven't got a clue what the hell happened. And you're married. And you're going to have to find out where you live and go there. And try to explain this. Now, I'll tell you, the rationalization and the justification of an alcoholic is absolutely incredible. He's even called our ancient enemy in step 10. But it's incredible how we can get by with more alibis. I don't know. Somebody else did it, but there you go. The evidence is clear. So I stepped into the shower. I didn't even have a shower or curtain on it, for God's sake. That's how cheap this place was. And it washed off. Wow. Everything I could see washed off, and I hope all the ones I couldn't see washed off. Now, I know you're looking for a punchline, but this is a drunk story. It doesn't make any sense. You see, all I know is it washed off. Now, since I heard this story from my mouth when I was 8 years sober, I've been using it quite a bit because I'm kind of interested in how this happened. So whenever I speak publicly, I ask that if there is anybody out here who has any knowledge as to purple stripes, please see me after the meeting. And oh my God, I hope it's a woman. You laugh. You weren't in my shoes when it happened. How can a man like me be a man like me? I drank a little bit of bourbon whiskey. I just did an aside, and I do bounce around a little bit. They ran a survey on heritage of my family. I have an older brother who has never had a drink in his life. And he and I are the only Carney, that's my last name, only Carney males that have lived past the age of 55. for seven generations because of wars, accidents, and the disease of alcoholism. The cunning, baffling, powerful disease that is so insidious that none of us know we've got it until there's no other place to go. And we wind up in the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I wound up, and this is the incredible thing, that if you stop to think that I've got four drinks in me, and this is on a Thursday, on a Friday night, I did not go to my first meeting until Tuesday. Yeah, and I didn't drink. I don't know why. Now, I should have drank. I should have. Did I finish my fourth drink? God, I hope so. I don't know. Something happened. I do not know. I stood up. They called. I went to St. Luke's on my first meeting. Many of you have been there, okay? And they had the sense enough to call upon me. Because they knew, obviously, they had another important dignitary in the crowd. And I stood up and said, I'm here to see what the creeps do on Tuesday night. But I didn't know. They were just like you. You laugh at the most stupid things. You show rank discourtesy for the people that are talking. And you're revealing secrets that nobody on God's green earth should ever hear about. And you're laughing at it. It's just insane. I bought a book that night because I was going to conquer you. And then there's the man who punched me on the chest. Lightly, and a good thing for both of us, he did. And he said, or I heard, you don't have enough guts to stay sober for 90 days. The madness and the anger and the rage that was mine turned on me and said, I'll see you drunk. I still got 7 years on me, and that's a good thing. But what had happened to me is that I went home that night and told my wife what happened. We sat in the garage and drank Coca-Cola or some other drink. We talked about what happened, and I said that they told me in that meeting something that has stuck with me from then to this moment. And I hear what I hear, and you will hear what you hear. And ideally, if we're in touch with the God of our understanding, you will hear what you need to hear. And I will say what I need to say, and that's the way this thing works. I heard somebody said that you will never have to drink again as long as you live if you don't want to. What I heard is they were telling me, if it was true, that I drank for 30 years because I had to. Oh, please. What a lie that is. You know, you drink because it's hot, or it's cold, or you're hungry, or you're not hungry. It's Tuesday. No, it's Friday. Every alky's got an excuse of some reasonable method is that I didn't have a drink yesterday, so I got to have two today. It doesn't make any difference. Drink because you had to. That really got me. I didn't quite understand that. How could anybody say make a statement like that? If they were right, everything I knew about me was wrong. Everything. Everything. And that's a scary proposition. So that was a Tuesday night. My friend and I would have left that meeting, except I was in his car. And I didn't want to walk home. I didn't care about you. I talked that night with my wife. She said something like this. I said, I might be an alcoholic. Not knowing what that meant, and just better than a lot of other names I've been called. And she looked at me and she said, oh, you're not a jackass. You don't care, do you? Here I've been insulted and you're laughing at me. God, I love life. I love the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I love you so much. Because you did for me what I could not do for myself. I don't think I'd ever found you. I don't know. I have no way of knowing. But I found you. That was on a Tuesday night, and we talked all night. Then I sat down and read the book. I'm a fast reader, and I thought it was a piece of trash. And I didn't drink the rest of the week. And he called me on Friday and said, you want to go to a meeting? And I said, I do not want to go back where those other nasty people are. And he said, okay, we'll go to another place. And so that night we went in his car again, And the people on that side of the town were much, much nicer than the people in Los Gatos. Well, if you're nice, I'll tell you what side of town that is. Okay. And once again, we came home, talked till 2-3 o'clock in the morning. All the great knowledge that you have when you're 5 days sober. And then he called me on Tuesday night and he said, "You want to go to a meeting?" And I said, "Yes, I'm looking forward to it." And I went there. It's amazing what those people did in a week. They were so friendly. They were so good. It's amazing. Even the guy who threatened me smiled. Doesn't happen very often, but he smiled. Then he called me and said, "You're looking forward to it? I'm looking, going to go to a meeting Friday. Do you want to go?" And I went that Friday night. And I have to tell you, I fell in love. My soul recognized you. I fell in love. The love affair started with me and Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've been on a run of love ever since. Because if you had it, if in true fact you had what I believed you had, and if you were not lying, as I was afraid you might be, everything I was ever looking for was in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Hell, I didn't even know I was an alcoholic yet. I didn't. You see, I still had a house. I still had a wife. She slept in the ice palace. That's the bedroom. I slept on the couch, which was my place. She was very rude. My children had all run away. I never understood why. I didn't know why they were afraid of me. I didn't know why. I didn't know why they didn't like me. I knew they loved me. I knew deep down in their soul, they loved me, but I didn't think they liked me. I knew they were afraid of me. I couldn't quite understand it. And they were gone from me, and I adore my children. I always have. God, even my eight-year-old, my last chance, was hiding in another room when I got home. And if what you had to offer was real, the keys were mine to open the door. But I didn't know I was an alcoholic, because I had things, and I had a job that made a lot of money in those days. I had a position of vice president and sales manager of a company that I helped become one of the major players in the business. Okay. I had 2 cars. They were paid for. How can you be an alcoholic with this much stuff? Okay. So I stayed here. And I listened to you. Then I ran across a set of tapes by a man whom I refer to as my mentor, that I had the privilege of getting to know a little bit. A man by the name of Chuck C. Okay. And it was necessary for me to do with Chuck the same thing I did with the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's vital to me. Vital. I had to know. It's recommended in our 11th step by Bill Wilson when he talked about finding out what the man meant when he's referring to the meditation or the prayer of St. Francis. What does that really mean to you? What do you mean to you? The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have read all kinds of books. I was an avid reader. And I could read and quote and do all the rest of that crap, but it didn't. What did it mean to me? So I started to find out what it meant to me. The first thing I did, it says in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, is that a much more important demonstration of these principles lies at home and in our respective affairs. Outside the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, anybody can look good in an AA meeting. Just fake it for a little while. The problem is, where is it at home? I had no home. By then I totally realized that I'd lost everything. I lost the kids. My wife had not let me in that bedroom for God knows how long, because I didn't belong in the bedroom. I was a lousy father. I didn't know why, God damn it, but I knew I was. And I knew that I had to find this thing, to find what I was looking for. I had to get what you had. And so, yeah, get what you had, I have to start doing what the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous said to do. And it says, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share. Oh, God. Share? I listen to you in AA meetings, and you share. You talk on a topic that is important to you. And you're as honest and open-minded as you can possibly be. So I went home and told Peg, my wife, I said, Peggy, I'm going to share with you. I'd like to think I was a little nicer than that, but I'm not sure. She said, what's that? I said, I'm going to pick a topic, and I'm going to share on it, and I'm going to be as honest and open-minded as I can. Your job is to sit, listen, and don't interrupt and try and understand. And when I'm done, you can speak to my topic, or a topic of your choice. And I will sit and listen, try to understand, and don't interrupt. And she cheated, because she knew how to share. I didn't. I had to start about real things for the first time in my life. I didn't know how to do that, and it hurt. But what really hurt is when she started telling real things to me. I didn't want to hear. I've been dodging all of my life. I didn't know I was dodging it until I had to sit and listen to it. Now, I don't recommend anybody do that. What I'm telling you is, why did a man like me, or how did a man like me become a man like me? I'm an entirely different person. You see, I got screwed because I read the big book a couple of times, or I don't know how many times by then. I, of course, still read the big book. But there are other spiritual principles in that big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. One of them says, avoid retaliation. Ooh! How about fault finding should be avoided like the plague? Yeah. So Peg would say something real, and it usually started with, do you remember when? She'd tell a story, I'd run to an AA meeting. You know what my wife said? Because I couldn't retaliate, I had to do something. I said, tell Peg, I'll be back. Off I go and come back. I'm ready to share again. The foundation of our recovery, those of you who are in the room, there are a number of you here who have had the privilege of getting to know my lovely bride and know that by the time of her passing a few years ago, that we had without exception one of the finest relationships God ever gave a man. All right. And a woman has ever received from a man. By that meaning, I was 5 months sober, and she looked at me and she said that I had what she wanted. This is the same woman that I used to call the ice queen. She wanted what I had. How in God's name can something like that happen? You know, I started drinking at 18 in El Paso, Texas. I just won the Golden Glove Championship, and they needed to celebrate. And that night, I found out, technically, you might say, everything I needed to know about alcoholism. I liked it. It made me big, bigger than the championship that I had just won. I could take on anybody in the house and even suggested that somebody try. Then it went to some place I don't know anything about because they started telling me the next morning about a wonderful time I had. I was sicker than a dog, and I couldn't wait for my next drink. I think in true fact, I say that because that's the story of a drunk. That's the story of my drunk. I drank until I couldn't drink anymore. I more times than not blacked out. I usually came up in strange places, and people told me what I had done, or the law. Now, I think that's everything you need to know about the disease of alcoholism, and I spent another 30 years gathering useless information, for Christ's sake. Okay. So that's my first one. And I tell you something also. The disease of alcoholism, because alcohol takes you places you don't want to go, and it makes you do things you don't want to do. Because a year later, I'm in Skid Row in Washington, D.C., learning that the thing to do is save your vomit in the morning because it might be the only drink you'll have in the morning. All right. Now, fortunately, I didn't drink that, but I saw it done, and that's where I learned it from a champion to Skid Row in a year, for God's sake. It's insane. But I grew up from then. I didn't like it down there, and I had the tools, and it was early enough that I got out. You know, I could go on and on with the drunkalogs, but I'm just saying 18, the disease. You know, I found out that I like bourbon whiskey just the way it was, but I wanted to be a refined drunk. So I learned to put ice in it. Took me 10 years to like the damn stuff. But that wasn't cool enough with bourbon over. I wanted to go for the real Ritz, and I said bourbon over with a splash of soda. 10 years later, I liked it. But I've always liked the results of alcoholism. But here it is, that a man with great aspirations and all the talent in the world to do the things that most of us want to do. And I managed to destroy it. I managed to destroy a marriage. I've been married twice. I've been a widower twice. I tell this story about the things that happened in my life. I married my high school sweetheart. We had 5 children. I came off of the street of Los Angeles because I had a little girl, and I wanted to give her the best shot I could in life because I loved my children with everything I owned. I loved my wife, but I know I loved my children. And so I came off the streets and I started becoming very successful. And 12 years later, I'm a very, very successful person in the city, in Los Angeles area, made for a major corporation. I've got nothing but a bright future ahead. I have a branch office that I'm going to manage. Okay. Everything's cool except that I drink a lot, huge amounts. I come off of a running drunk one night. I don't remember whether it's day or night. It's all a little foggy. I come off of a running drunk, and I'm on the telephone, and I'm talking to my next-door neighbor. I don't know how that happened, and I don't want to know. But he said, "Your wife has just committed suicide." And I went absolutely insane. Alcohol had nothing to do with that. I went absolutely roaring ass insane, and I'm much stronger than I look. It took, they told me, 6 firemen, 4 policemen, 2 poor civilians to get me in a chokehold sufficient enough so they could stuff me into a straitjacket. The room that we were in, several of them flew through. I understand there were 6 broken bones, none of them were mine. Okay, and then I come to in the psychiatric wing of the Los Angeles General Hospital, listening to a doctor looking down at me as I lay on the gurney, still in a straitjacket, so violent that I'm strapped to the gurney because they're afraid of me. I don't want people to be afraid of me. Sure, I can fight good. Sure, I fight better than anybody I ever saw. But I didn't want to hurt anybody. I murdered my wife. That's what I knew. And I'm laying there, and they're afraid of me, and the doctor looked down, and I hear them talking about what an insane, roaring-ass idiot person I am. And the doctor looked down at me, and he said, "If I let you go, you won't hurt me, will you?" And that's the last time. All I could do was cry because I didn't know. I didn't know. 17 years before I got sober, there I sit. I didn't know. It took me a while to get out of that hospital because I found a place I could disappear. And I'm talking about love. You see, I love a lot. I've always loved. I didn't know what to do with my love. I've always cared. I don't know about you. I'm talking about me. I've always cared. I always said I care too much. I want to stay away from you. Because if I'll care about you if I know you. And I don't want to know you. Because screw it. That's why I'm isolated. I love my children to death. Gander, death. They sure as hell came close probably a few times. I can't tell you that. They can. I can. Okay. There I am in this nut house, and you know, I found a place I can disappear. Truly disappear. It's a black place. And every once in a while, they'd slide the door open. A little tiny window, because I'm in a padded cell. And I'm still in a straitjacket, and they slide this thing back open, and it wakes me up. It pulls me out of that thing. And I said, ah! And I go fits and dram, and they give me another shot of something. And then they close it, and then one time when they slid that door open, I said, oh God, where's my children? And I couldn't go there anymore because I had five of them. I did not even know if they were alive or not. The disease of alcoholism takes you places you don't want to go and makes you do things you don't want to do. But also, the alky are pretty swift on our feet. And so I conned them into letting me out in relatively short order without need of further psychiatric care. And I took my five little girls and I came up to Northern California to be a single parent before the term was used, I think. This is a long time ago. I'm old. It's appropriate to tell you how old I am. I will tell you this way. I have eight children. You want to finish the story? I have 23 grandchildren. I have 23 great-grandchildren. My oldest great-grandson is 19. Now, when he produces, which is probably going to happen pretty soon, that's going to make me great-great. And on the basis of the, oh, and there's a 24th great-grandchild on the way. And therefore, it's necessary for me to tell you that I'm probably the greatest person you've ever met. May not like a damn thing I said, but you got to walk around and say, good God, he's great. Now, if you want to figure out the calculations, you'll know how old I am pretty damn close. Oh. But I got some life in me that was given to me by the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got things to do. And my deal with the God of my understanding is allow me to do his business until the last day. Whatever the hell that means, that's on him, but it's on me that my desire is to continue to do what it is that I've been doing from the last day. Now you talk about the beginning. I hit the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I couldn't live that way. I met and married another lady who happened to have a boy and a girl, and one of that girl is sitting in here. God, I love that little girl. I fell in love with her before I fell in love with her mother. I saw her first. Okay? I knew her mother by telephone. I had no clue what she was like, other than the fact I liked her a lot. I fell in love with her almost immediately. Okay, and that young little girl there, and she's one of the ones who ran away because she couldn't stand her father. All right. I've been sober a while. And I can't cry because the last tears I've been capable of shedding happened laying on that gurney. Something happened to my eyes and I can't get tears out of them. But I choke up. Can you imagine what it's like for me to have that girl want to come listen to me? You're serious. It's insane to think that a man like me could become a man like me so that she would like to hear her father talk. Well, one of the things I did is I turned into a wimp. I just sob a little bit. I can't get any tears coming out, but I'm sure you'll forgive me for that. I looked in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and how I asked myself some prayers. I do not know exactly, I framed them differently, but you see, I didn't know how to understand the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I started reading and I asked this. There's things in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that really are powerful if you look at them. I mean, the whole book from one end to the other, but there's a lot of stuff before you get to the steps that blows your mind. Blows mine. So, how about it says, choose your own conception of God. Now, I do not know if everybody, I know damn well that everybody does not choose their own conception of God. I know that because I work with an amazing number of people that I've worked steps with. But they take a God, somebody's God, the church God, but they do not sit down and choose their own conception of God. Because why? The great reality is within. It's there and only there that he is found. That's somewhere else in the book. You got to choose your own conception of God. And this is before you get to the steps, for Christ's sake. It's written there, way in front of chapter 5. God is everything or he's nothing. He either is or he isn't. What's your choice to be? That's two questions. That's not one. That's two questions. God is everything. Figure out how God can be everything or throw the book away, in my opinion, because it's asking you to choose between two subjects and you have to examine both subjects. Now, I'll tell you what I did. Now, I'm not saying it's right. This is what I did. And what I do, you don't have to do. I have to do it because I want it all. This is where my greed can come out and roar along anywhere on the face of this earth. I want it all. I don't know not what it is. I want to be the best person in Alcoholics Anonymous I can possibly be. I want to be the best student of the God of my understanding I can possibly be. I want to do and dedicate my life to his business. And that's what I do, and I want to do it damn good, and I want to continue to do it that way and get better every day. And I have to find out what some of this stuff does. God is everything. What is everything? What is everything? And a lot of people say, well, God created the heaven and earth. I say, well, what did he create from? He didn't say a bucket of mud in the Mississippi River. What did he create from? He had to create from something. How about creating from himself? Oh, good God. Did God create the trees? The material for this? This? The Oxford group has a phrase, I think, I don't know if they originate or not. It says, in him I live and move and have my being. God thought and the Big Bang occurred, if you like it that way. Bang. We are intelligent agents, spearheads of God's ever-advancing creation. What a wonderful line. God's creation is advancing. I intend on advancing because I don't want God to move away from me. And he will unless I continue to grow. Because that's what it says. God's, I'm an intelligent agent, the spearheads of God's ever-advancing creation. All right. So if God created everything, and he created it for himself, then you are me and I am you. I am therefore that which God is, and God is therefore that which I am. There's no separation. There can't be if God is everything. Now, I'm not saying you have to believe it. The book says that. Or he's it, gives you an option. Or he's nothing. God is everything or he's nothing. How in God's name can you say there's no God? Well, many of us did, and I was one who didn't give a rat's ass. I had put it carefully aside. I'm not interested in this thing. Oh, well, I've been baptized in seven different religions and hands laid upon me by Bishop Pike in the Episcopal Church. Seven, that's eight shots at it, and they obviously did it wrong. For God's sake, it didn't work. Well, wait a minute. There's a lot of people out there, so I have to look at men and see there's some degree of order in the universe. Bill Wilson talks about that, which is a cosmic mistake. Things happen with great regularity. There's some degree of order, of something. They call it the chaos theory. The bigger that is, the more order there is to it. If that is the case, then there's a God of something. There's a force, a controlling force of some nature. Call it anything you want. Doesn't make any difference. If there's a course, if there is some force of some nature, and you deny it, then the only way, this is what I came up with, the only way God isn't is when I play God. Now we hear people talking about it all the time in AA meetings. First of all, I took my will back. Oh, you poor son bitch. Okay. They're bragging about it. Now they can't do it, I don't think, but they can deny the existence of what they've got. they're talking about, they're doing all sorts of things in AA that I don't necessarily approve of, but doesn't seem to get everybody drunk. You know, there's a phrase I use quite frequently, I don't want to do anything today that's going to get me drunk in 5 years. That's how this insidious disease is. Almost everybody seems to go out for a number of different reasons, and nobody can tell you exactly the right one. But always we want to know the right thing that they caused them to go out, so we won't do that thing. Man, it's a combination. I could say that I heard somebody say once, you only have to go to one meeting a year. Problem is you don't know which one. So you better go to all of them. You only have to work one step. I don't know where that came from. But it better be 12 after you've done the first 11. Okay. Our program is suggested, and that's true. It is suggested. It is absolutely suggested that we do this thing. Nobody's going to force you to make it. That choice. But if you want what we have, this is the only way we get it. Okay. I asked the prayer of God of my understanding, show me what I needed to know. When it came to the first step, and all hell broke loose. Don't do it. Unless you're prepared for an answer from God, don't do it. All hell broke loose in a saloon down in San Diego when I was going to a state championship in bowling. I used to be a bowler. You know, I was bowling, and I was real good. I was on the hot shot league. I was the loser on the hot shot. They always have to have somebody down who doesn't bowl very well, that every once in a while can throw a good game. Okay, that always guarantees them a win. My average went from 170 to 213 in a month, and I quit. You can't get any better than that. Okay, the reason I say that is because that's what I have done. You get good, and then you quit. You don't get good at this, you get better. You don't get well on this thing, you get better. You got to get better. You claim your progress. Sure, I'm an arrogant SOB. Book says I claim my progress. If I do these simple things, I get to claim them. I'm not going to deny that. I'm a product of the Alcoholics Anonymous. Good, better, and different. I represent, I believe in God. I believe in the God that you gave me. I believe with all my heart and soul that I am His Son. And I'm the only representative of my God you will see, because I'm the only one. And you are the only representative of your God that can be seen. There's a responsibility that goes with that. I believe. All right, so what happened is in this down in San Diego, I sat in a saloon with the prayers I offered, the same prayers. Step one and two are taken at the same time, according to the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I say that because it's in the book. It says, being convinced of this, after the ABCs, the line after A, that I'm an alcoholic and cannot manage my own life, B, that probably no human power is going to relieve my alcoholism, and C, that God can and will if He saved him. Being convinced of this, we are at step three. I have studied and studied the description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our adventures before and after, which make clear the three pertinent ideas. And if those three ideas are not perfectly clear, you go back and read the description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, because I want them to be clear to me. I want to know what the hell they mean, because after the ABCs, it says, being convinced of this, we're at step three. So I presume, I don't know. This is what the book told me. You can read anything you want to in it, because it's your book. I'm saying this is what I do and which I believe in, and there are a hell of a lot of other people in this world that believe essentially the same thing that I do, because I have passed on what was so freely given to me. All right.
all hell broke loose in this place, and the God of my understanding revealed to me. Talk about a moment of clarity. I had a moment of, I had 2.5 hours of abject hell. And I knew why my daughters left me. I knew why my wife was afraid of me and my kids were afraid of me. I knew that alcoholism was my master. I knew the step one is that I had lost the power of choice in drink. I knew that I had no passed beyond human aid. And I talk about bottoming out in Fresno 9 years before I got sober. And I was condemned to go to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of my intolerable situation as best I could, because I didn't know there was a spiritual help available, and that's what this is. A spiritual life is not a theory. It must be lived. There's a line in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous that would be pure insanity in any other book, in my opinion, to choose between an alcoholic death and a spiritual way of life is not an easy alternative. Than it is. And some of that, no. Oh God, step five, I'll do five. No, I'm going to do no five, no nine. It's like an addict or a drunk saying, no, I want to know what it does to me first. Oh, I don't like the taste of that shit because it makes me tummy hurt. Please. Suddenly we get cautious. Wait a minute, now I'm sober. I've got it whipped. The disease of alcoholism, one of the greatest tools the disease has to work with is a self-deception, for us to believe the lie. I believe that. The greatest tool the disease of the mind has is to believe the lie. I don't have to do that. I can get by with this. I've gone to too many meetings this week. I'm tired. I can stay home. Okay, I don't need to sponsor that person because, after all, I sponsored somebody last year. Oh, I can't take a service commitment because it will interfere with whatever, fill it in. Okay. The disease of alcoholism working in the mind. Those who have relapsed know how the disease of the mind will justify any course of action, and you will believe the lie. And that I have passed beyond human aid as an alcoholic. And I know that my thinking is screwed up because I believe the second step, which guarantees me that my power, my God, will restore me to sanity. And my dictionary told me sanity is soundness of mind and rational thinking. Bill Wilson caught me very early in the meeting, very early in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous in his story. You see, because I hear in the story, oh God, what's that? Think, your brain's dead. Oh. Think is a sign that's used in most AA meetings. That, did you know, people don't like me to say this, but I like to say it anyway, okay? The first think is the smallest think. If you ever look at the sign, the first think is the smallest one. The second think is almost twice as big as the first think. And then the last think is the middle-sized think. Bill Wilson says in his story, we shall test our thinking with this newfound God awareness, and common sense will therefore become uncommon sense. You test your thinking with the alcoholic, anonymous thinking, with the God of your understanding. Test it. Because God gave us, it says elsewhere in the book, our God gave us a brain to use. Good God, did we use it out there. How many times did we plot the next fixed drink or pill? What do I have to do to survive? We're the biggest bunch of survivors on the face of this earth. And did we turn weak, dumb, and stupid just because we're standing on a threshold of victory? Right on the threshold of victory to a new way of life, brand new, unpolished, unused, so blue there's not even new that there's not even a fingerprint on our first promise of we will know a new freedom, a new life. It's ours here. For the taking, we take this thing or we turn it down. It's like God is everything or he's nothing. Do you want to play God? You played God. I don't know about you. I played God for 48 years before I got sober, for God's sake. And it almost killed me. I'm not capable. I love this phrase in Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, I'm going to live life on life's terms. That's not in the book. It's not in the book. God damn it, it's not in the book. You accept life on life's terms, and you live life on spiritual terms. The spiritual life is not a theory. It must be lived. Alcohol and living life on life kicked my ass, to be honest with you. Life beat me to death. Alcohol was the only thing that kept me alive long enough for you to find me. I'm going to go out there and live the same way I lived? Please. Everything changes. There's another phrase that I like to use that I got from somewhere, I don't know. The person who walked in the door, that same person will drink again. The person who walked in the door, that same person will drink again. You've got to change, because the person who came in the door is a drunk. It can't stay sober. We'll drink again. You can be here. If you don't do the things necessary to stay here, you will remain the same person and you will drink again. It's that simple. So we got to change. Why not take something that has been in existence for almost 48 years or 68 years? It works. Millions of people have gotten sober. And those that didn't even get sober, their lives have improved dramatically if they keep hanging around the fringes of Alcoholics Anonymous. My third step, I got all of the information within that moment of 2.5 hours of hell, I called it, in that saloon in San Diego. And I looked at the third step, and there was a problem I had, not with the steps. Now I'll tell you what my problem was, me. I hated me. I hated every part of me. Now the book, big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says that resentment is the number one offender. Now I'll tell you, if I want to count resentments in this room, the number one offender is you don't like yourself. Yeah. Most of you never had your name on the resentment list because you don't like yourself. You hate yourself, if you're like me, certainly. And I couldn't go to my Creator to offer myself to Him when I insisted on playing God in my own life. I couldn't do that. I don't believe you can. You know, going back to the Oxford group, they have a phrase for a sin. I love it. I just love it. Now, those of you who know, obviously, that the Oxford group is where Alcoholics Anonymous had met when they first started, and Bill Wilson essentially got to use that. The mission down in New York, and Bill and Dr. Bob tried to get sober in the Oxford group, and they maintained the Oxford group until shortly after the book was written. So a lot of their theory is contained in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and a sin. They say a sin. This is a quote from the Oxford group. Anything you do that separates you from God and your fellows. I cannot deal with conscious separation. I'm striving for conscious unity. I spent my whole life out there. I'm coming in here. I want to join one with the God, my Creator, my God, seeking conscious unity. And I can't do that with the biggest resentment hanging over my head, squandering hours worthwhile. If I don't, how many times have I fought the battle, lost it, refought the battle with me, and all the shit and the crap that I did? You know, I know that many people use the phrase that if you're a Christian, isn't it wonderful? Because if you're a Christian, you can ask God to come down and have a special crucifixion for you. Okay? Because this is serious, and for me, I couldn't take a third step until I accepted me and the forgiveness of my God and forgave myself and practiced that for the rest of my life, because I am not going to go into some fight with God as I understand God. I'll lose. My hands are much too short, so I don't even think of that. And when I came to the point in time, this is all I wanted to do. I figured it was possibly the single most important decision I was going to make in my entire life. I went to my wife and I said, I need to take a third step. And she said, wonderful, I'd like to go with you and do one too. I'm 4 months sober. And we took my daughter, one 17-year-old or just 18 that was still hanging in. Okay, real sick Al-Anon. She's still going to Al-Anon too. Not because of me necessarily, but I started it. And my son, who is 8 years old, God as you understand God. Okay. The book says, and it was important to me, is that for anybody who's confused and want to try and understand God, you're wasting your time. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, understood. Bill Wilson, when he took his third step in the hospital bed when he had that flash of light, he said that I turned my will and my life over to the care of my God as I then understood him. Whenever you have a belief in a power sufficient enough that you will go through him with holding nothing back, offering the best you've got, that is the God you then understood. Now, I didn't necessarily have a concept of what the God I have then versus what I have now. Just the same thing, but much, much, much bigger. And I know much, much, much less. Went up into the Santa Cruz Mountains. We found a glen on the side of the road, and the sun was streaming down. I remember it well. You see, I've already had a vital spiritual experience when I took my second step, first and second step, because I screamed out in that saloon, God, if you get me through this without killing anybody or drinking, I know what to do. That was my plea. That was my prayer. I lived through it. I didn't hurt anybody. I had some close calls. My wife said she'd like a martini. I said, I'll get you one. I got to be a bravado while I'm scared crapless. So I walk up to the bar and I said, martini, and he set it down and he poured it, and he poured the perfect martini. A perfect martini is when the bubbles on the top, there's more in it than the glass will hold. Now, if you ever drank a martini, you know the only thing you can do is put your head and down and suck it up. My head started to go down. I didn't want it. And I got my hand flat on the bar and wrapped around the stem of the cocktail glass, and I'll be damned if it didn't shake my hand, and it spilled on me. Now, I don't know if you noticed, but while I was telling this story, I reached back here behind in my rear pocket to pull out my handkerchief, because that's what I did then, because I knew the next thing that I will do was lick my hand off. That gives you a clue about the disease of alcoholism. I did not want to drink. My head went for it. So the God of my understanding gave me freedom. I asked and he gave it to me. So I went up to the Santa Cruz Mountain and we all stood in a corner in a circle right in the middle of this glade. I held my wife's hand and she held my daughter's hand and my son held her hand. I don't know what the hell it was. All of us stood in the corner and then we kneeled. And I turned my will and my life over to the care of God as I then understood him. My wife turned her will and her life over to the care of her God as she then understood him. My daughter turned her will and her life over to the care of God as she then understood him. My 8-year-old pulled on his mommy's hand and said, Mommy, will you do it for me? And Peggy turned his life over to the care of God as she understood him, knowing that his will had to be handled by him. Now, the reason I tell you that is, first of all, of course, to let you know I took a third step, but there is also a miracle happened that day. My son was born with a severe learning disability. Severe. He was in a special school. We found it early, and he was in a special schooling. Okay, to give him the best education he could possibly get, because he had a learning disability. 2 weeks after the third step, the school teacher called Peggy and said, Mrs. Carney, I'd like you to come in and let's talk about Daniel. And she went down and the teacher said, I don't understand what's happened, but he is no longer disabled. So we took him to the doctor, and he's been on medication that helped with his disability. And the doctor says, I don't know what happened here. I will call it a spontaneous remission. It may come back, but he is not disabled, or his disability has gone from him. Now, at that same time, I told you I came in with a lot of money. I was broke. Broke. I was saving the world for Alcoholics Anonymous. Hell, I was commuting to Los Angeles, for God's sake. There wasn't enough drunks in Northern California. I'm going west, south. I'm stone ass broke. And during that period of time, for almost 2 years, my son lived free of his disability. Then one day it returned with a vengeance. Interestingly enough, I had started a company, and we had just turned successful. And I put him through a school that's the equivalent of the Stanford University Graduate School. Okay. He got the best education he could possibly get under the circumstance. What an amazing coincidence, don't you think? Yeah. I did a four-step directly and exactly the way my sponsor told me to do. I went home. Now, there's nothing I'm willing to do, not willing to do, because, you see, it asks, and this is what I want to know, are you willing to go to any lengths? That's not negotiable. You know, it's the damnest thing. I studied that thing and studied that thing. Any lengths really means any lengths. There's no way around it. You want it, you go to willing any lengths. Half measures avail you nothing. It doesn't even say that 90% gives you anything. So you better go for the whole thing, says I, and I want the whole thing, and I'm willing to go to any length. And I've been doing that successfully, any length. And you can go to the most sordid place on earth, and I have, in sobriety, and my Heavenly Father's never let me down. All right? So I wrote my fourth step. I did it precisely the way that my sponsor told me to do it. Now, I finished it around 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, I'm not too sure. And I read it, and all hell broke loose in my heart. I suddenly knew, oh God, I knew. I took my hand, I'm not going to use this because I heard it that night. No more! I don't have to live that way anymore. I found the exact nature of my wrongs, and I don't have to live that way anymore. I got the key. I got the golden key. I ran to my sponsor. I had to wait till he opened his office. And I said, I'm here. And he said, so am I. And I said, but I'm doing my fifth step. And he said, I'm busy. And I said, I'm not. And every hour or so he'd look at me and he said, John, I'm still busy. And I said, I'm still not. And around 2 o'clock in the afternoon, he gets off. And he said, all right, let's go. I went not some secluded little confession stall. We went to a restaurant by the front door, directly across from the cashier. So everybody that walked in and walked out had a chance to hear. Now we did our business, and after a while I'm getting a little bit pissed. The reason I am is here I'm spilling my guts out and nobody wants to hear. Nobody stopped. They ignored me. You'd think that after all of the torment and anguish I went through for 48 years, somebody would pay attention. My sponsor, however, stayed awake, and that's good. After we're all done, he looked at me and he said, John, you got it right. I wanted nothing other than that. I got exactly from my sponsor exactly what I needed to hear. You got it right. I went home. I carefully reviewed the first 5 proposals, making sure I'd left nothing out. From the depths of my soul, I wanted this thing. You see, by now I know, of course, after 1 and 2, I know that I'm an alcoholic. And I know that I'm doomed to an alcoholic death or a spiritual way of life, and I've chosen. I don't know about you. I'm not in here for negotiations. I don't believe in half measures. I did not do half measures in the streets. I was a survivalist. I could take on anybody and walk away. And I don't have to do that here. I'm not going to walk away. I'm here for whatever it offers. And my Heavenly Father is the one who's going to direct what's offered to me. So when it's all done, I looked at step 6 and suddenly realized I was ready. Now I know that step 6 says willing. We're entirely willing. Hell, I've been willing all my life. I'm not depreciating willing, but willing is an action word. But a ready seems to be an act of creation that occurs through the first 5 steps because I was truly ready to let it go. I knew it was had no value. I knew it's the thing that caused me to separate myself from my children, from my wife, from society, from myself, from God, from everybody. A sin is anything that separates you from God and your fellows. Man, that's it. Sin, me. That's what I was. I didn't have to do that anymore. And when I was ready, I knew I was ready. But God was going to do the work. I was cooperating. God was doing the work. I understand one of the definitions of humility in our seventh step is a true understanding of self. The absence of pride then, not now, then, was an absence of pride. Willing to do anything because I knew now the truth about me. I was a child of a loving Creator. I did things that children of a loving Creator should not do. I didn't want to do that. I did it anyway. I'm responsible for what I do. Unfortunately, I did some crappy stuff. We all did it. Everyone in this room didn't get here for being nice. For God's sake, we got here because there's no other place to go, and I'm here. There was no other place to go, and I always wanted to be nice. Oh, God, I wanted to be nice. If I had anything I wanted to do when I got here, is I don't want to hurt anybody anymore. That's all I was. If I got that, I'm overpaid. And oh my God, I am truly the richest man in the world. So when I was ready, I offered up to God. Since the God of my understanding, I've got permission. It says the word, and step three, it says the wording is optional as long as you express your ideals, voicing them without reservation. So I didn't have to use a prayer that I didn't believe in. I had a chance to use my own. Because I'm one of those who had to learn how to pray. I had to learn how to pray. So I believe in prayer. I absolutely believe in prayer. But I also believe that a prayer is not a prayer unless you're obedient to the prayer that you offer. I'm obedient to the prayer. I'm obedient to the third step prayer. My third step prayer. I'm obedient. I have never consciously deviated from the obedience to the third step that I offer because that's what I believe in. I offered my sixth and seventh step up, and it's something like, Father, look, this is what the wording was, something like this. You don't have to agree with it, because there's a prayer in the book, and I'm not trying to change the book. This is what I did, because I got permission. The wording is optional, as long as you can express your idea. Voicing without reservation, oh God, I'm running way over. Time to stop. You know, I love you. I truly love you. I am the richest man in the world. I'm sorry I talked so long. But I'm not sorry that I said a word that I said. I am truly the richest man in the world. And you know something? My God runs a world that there's enough for each and every one of us in this room to be the richest person in the world.